let us never tolerate outrageous conspiracy theories concerning the attacks of September the 11th. Malicious lies that attempt to shift the blame away from the terrorists themselves, away from the guilty.
When we talk about war, we're really talking about peace. Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower.
Confronting the evidence. Thinking the unthinkable. Dedicated to exposing the fraud of September 11th, 2001. Introducing Visibility 9/11 with your host, Michael Woolsey.
Welcome to Visibility 9/11. I'm your host, Michael Woolsey, and it's Friday, December 12th, 2008. And this is the podcast dedicated to exposing the fraud of the official story, September 11th, 2001. Welcome to the program today to all the new and returning listeners over at Visibility911.com. And special thanks going out to Scott, who does the website and has recently done a great update to the site. So I really appreciate all the fine work that Scott has done. Visibility911.com is the website where you can find all the archives of the past shows that we've done, as well as a blog section and lots of information about the events of September 11, 2001 and the subsequent cover-up.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
I just want to make one quick announcement that I know I've got a lot of listeners who come to me via iTunes. And recently somebody put a real cool comment up, and I noticed that as long as I've been doing the show, over 2 years now, nobody had ever commented over at iTunes, and I know I get lots of listener comments. And so I would just encourage you that if you get the show through iTunes, that you go over there and leave us some comments, and then other folks who might come across the show would see your words, and maybe they might be interested in checking out the show, where we get lots of information, lots of great guests, with regards to the events of September 11th and uncovering the cover-up, so to speak. So now, it's been a while since I've been doing the show regularly, and I just want to say that I'm going to be working on trying to get back into finding the time to do shows on a little bit more regular basis. And today we're happy to be back with you, and we're going to talk about a subject I haven't talked about for quite some time, but there has been a lot happened in the month since the 7th anniversary of 9/11. Most notably, the final report issued by the National Institute for Standards and Technology, also known as NIST. And in typical fashion, with most everything regarding the official story of 9/11, this has been a changing story which has morphed over the years. It's taken them 7 years to get this report out, which is unbelievable, but it just goes to show the extent of the hoops that they will jump through to try to defy the laws of physics and gravity, etc. But irregardless, we now have an official story for what brought down Tower 7. And I know that most of my listeners are very familiar with World Trade Center 7. But for those who are not, we get a lot of new listeners. Building 7, WTC 7, was a 47-story tower. It mysteriously and suddenly collapsed into its own footprint at about 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11. There are several videos available if you haven't seen this collapse, and when you watch it, you can tell, any average person can tell that this video shows that this building has many, many characteristics of a controlled demolition. Now, to top that off, collapse of this 47-story tower was completely omitted from the 9/11 Commission report and buried by the media. It was shown on the afternoon of 9/11 as it happened and then was rarely ever seen again on the mainstream media. But 7 years later, we finally have the final official story, and according to NIST, World Trade Center 7 is the first steel high-rise building in world history to ever collapse due to fire. Now, it's notable, I think, to bring up that several theories that were floated around by NIST and the Popular Mechanics hit piece have all been pretty much abandoned, and that includes the theory that the diesel fuel tanks in the basement caused this tremendous inferno that brought the tower down. It includes that damage from the collapse of the North Tower scooped out a huge section of the building. They've gotten rid of that. It wasn't the way the building was constructed over this electrical substation. At one time they were trying to say that that was the cause. And interestingly enough, NIST even goes so far to say that the collapse of Building 7 was not, I repeat, was not caused by explosives. Now, I found this to be quite strange, but it just goes to show that we are having an effect. We forced this report. We have forced them to reveal new information that shows that they are definitely covering things up. And one of the organizations out there which is doing some fantastic work, led by Richard Gage, is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. Their website, ae911truth.org. And today we have guest David Chandler with us. David Chandler is a member of the American Association of Physics Teachers and also an active member of ae911truth.org. And David has recently released a short article and video titled World Trade Center 7, NIST Admits Freefall. And during this video, David shows some really important information, I believe, in that he and Dr. Jones managed to get some questions into this technical briefing that was held by NIST on August 26th. And this briefing was held less than 1 week after their final NIST report on Tower 7. And I think that they've done a fantastic job. So here to talk a little bit about Tower 7 and his work with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is David Chandler. David, welcome to Visibility 9/11.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good, David. How's it going?
Real good.
We sure appreciate you taking your time out of your busy Friday night to come on and talk to listeners about your work. First of all, David, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself to the listeners. Tell us a little bit about David Chandler.
Okay, well, I'm basically a high school physics teacher. I've also taught junior college and so forth, so I have a good background in physics. Went to Harvey Mudd College, and then I went to Cal Poly, got a master's in math, another master's in education. So I've mainly been teaching for most of my career. I've taught for about 30 years, and I try to get students to think critically and to use good analytic techniques. I think a lot of things need to be viewed. A lot of things that are social have quantitative aspects to it, and I don't think you can just sort of ignore math and really understand the modern world. So that's part of my mission, I guess, as a teacher, is to bring sort of that kind of consciousness to what's going on in the world around us.
So what got a physics teacher involved in the September 11th issue of what really happened on 9/11?
Well, my sister, who is an English professor, was the one who dragged me in, actually. She was friends with the wife of David Ray Griffin, and she went to some conferences about that and was telling me how this was hot stuff and all that. And, I didn't really know much about it at first, and she showed me, she got some videos and things at a conference she went to. And when I saw the towers fall, the twin towers fall, one of the things that really blew me away was noticing how they mushroomed out, how the outward speed of the material was so incredible. Right on the television screen, whenever I see things, I try to estimate what's going on, and I just estimated off just out of crude measurements right on the television screen that there's material being ejected horizontally outward from the Twin Towers at upward of 60 miles an hour. And that was, it was a reasonable estimate at the time. Since then, I actually took the video, and I have a tool that I use in my classes called Physics Toolkit. And you can step through frame by frame and put little markers on each frame and then measure the motion, velocities and accelerations and things like that. And I found that the actual horizontal ejection speed of some of these massive chunks of stuff coming from high in the towers were upwards of 70 miles an hour. I got about 73 miles an hour on my measurement. And I just, you know, that really sucked me in. And I started looking, I basically started reading everything there was to read about the theories of the collapse and so forth. I wouldn't call myself, I mean, you know, the term conspiracy theorist is a real put down. And I think it originates with the Kennedy assassination, when they're trying to establish, you know, a lone gunman, and the idea that it wasn't just a lone gunman, that there were others involved, is where that term came from. And it's really not appropriate in this case. And I think you need to basically just look at what's going on in the world and use your common sense and use whatever technical expertise you have try and filter out what doesn't make any sense at all and see how you can put the rest together.
Let me ask you this, David. Did you not see, on the day of 9/11, did you not see the towers coming down?
Actually, I didn't initially. When I first got up in the morning, I turned my computer on and I saw the towers smoking. And so I don't know if one or both of the planes had hit by that time. But then I basically woke my wife up and just said, sounds like we have a big news day. And then I went off to school. And my initial response was, you know, the chickens have come home to roost, because I know that the U.S. has done so much to anger people in various parts of the world. I assumed that was what was going on. And I didn't really play the TV in my classroom, because I figure a lot of the early stuff, they're going to just talk endlessly with the same things over and over again. I just sort of shied away from just obsessing about that all day long. And, you know, I of course saw it later on in the day, but I really didn't get much of a first day experience of people who just stayed glued to their television sets all day.
But you eventually saw them. What do you think caused you to not observe some of these things that you saw later, the first few times you saw it?
Oh, you mean as far as it being, you know, my later observation that it was, it looked like a controlled demolition, you mean?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I was just sort of taking it all in. It was just a big, you're sort of getting avalanched with all this new information, and you're hearing, there's a constant running commentary, of course, from the news media, and just like everybody, they just sort of take in the whole experience, and I don't think everybody's thinking very clearly on the first pass like that. But once you start looking at it, once you really start focusing on what's going on, which was what was possible after getting a little distance from the event, that's where some of the things they were saying started to fall apart in my mind.
Yeah, I agree, and I think that happened to me. I have told my story on this program before where I didn't even see any of those images for 2 years afterwards. So
really?
I just couldn't bear to watch. And so when I did kind of come to this stuff, I kind of looked at it through fresh eyes, where I felt like I hadn't really been subjected to the barrage of propaganda that was coming out of the telly.
Hmm. Well, that's something there.
So when was this, when did your sister bring you these videos?
Let's see. It had to be about 2002 sometime. It was pretty early on in terms of the truth movement, I guess, but 2002, 2003. I don't know exactly how to calibrate it, but I know David Ray Griffin was involved at the time, and I think there was some, if whenever he got involved was when she started hearing about it, I'm sure.
I see. So what was your first reaction when you saw Tower 7 coming down?
Well, it looked like, you know, what it looks like is here's this building that just sinks into the ground. I mean, you don't see the base typically in most of them. You just see the top half of the building, and it just goes whoop, and it just whole thing just goes right down into the ground is what the appearance is. Obviously, the primary destruction that was going on was in the bottom half of the building because it was out of sight, hidden behind the other buildings.
Sure, sure. But that thing just comes straight down, and I mean, many of us had kind of noted that it appeared to be coming down at least near free fall speed. And since
well, a lot of people have said that it had come down at free fall and or near free fall and all these different estimates. And, you know, I just took it at face value for a long time, and I just thought I was sort of confirming the other measurements when I started doing the measurements myself.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that was different, though, is when I first did the measurement, I pretty much duplicated what somebody else had done, and I was getting like 9 meters per second squared. Rather, let me fill that in. The acceleration of gravity is talking about how quickly the speed builds up. It's not the speed itself. And so it's how many, if I go meters per second, if you will indulge me a second, it's how fast the speed increases. In your car, it's like measuring how fast does that speedometer needle go from 0 to 60, right? If it goes whoosh right over there, you're accelerating a lot. If it takes a long time to climb up there, you're accelerating a little. So measuring the acceleration of this thing. Anyway, the magic number in metric units is 9.8 is the acceleration of gravity, and I was getting about 9. And then I realized that, you know, the data didn't seem to be consistent. It was sort of steeper if I just look at the first part of the data and then not so steep towards the end. And so when I sort of focused on the part that was coming down faster, it was pretty much right at free fall. And so I did quite a few measurements. I measured from a couple different points of view. I found a good – there was one video that I actually used in my videos. There was one of the videos of the building coming down that I used in my analysis videos. That has a very distant camera, and it's a very square-on view. And that's good for the measurements because you don't have to worry about, you know, an angle looking up or anything. And so you can get good measurements that way. And in that one, it was pretty clear that there was a good chunk. In fact, it was approximately 2.5 seconds where it was literally indistinguishable from free fall. And then for the next 1.5 seconds, roughly, it was almost a free fall. And what I've been doing earlier and what other people have been doing is just taking the whole thing as one data set and sort of averaging it out, and that didn't really come across quite the same way. So that fact that it was really on the money on free fall for such a significant length of time is actually an important fact.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, I would think that any amount of free fall in such a massive building would have to be significant because there was tremendous amount of steel, and just the way that they build structures, they're extremely redundant. And Richard Gage talks a lot about this in his presentations and about just the resistance underneath there. And for it to be able to fall at free fall, there would literally have to be no resistance.
That's right. To be at free fall, let me do a little physics lesson for your listeners here. What they talk about for free fall is if you drop a rock, it's going to accelerate downward. And it turns out it doesn't matter how big the rock is. You can have a pebble or a big boulder, and it'll fall at the same acceleration. And any resistance will slow the fall, you know, any upward force. And one of the things that provides resistance eventually is air resistance. You know, if you drop something over a long distance, you pick up more and more air resistance. You eventually get to a constant speed. That's called terminal velocity. Well, if you have something that's really heavy moving at relatively slow speeds so that you don't have that much air resistance, that's where you have what's called free fall, where basically free fall is motion under the influence of gravity and nothing else. And any resistance there is going to be measurable as less acceleration.
Well, even air has some resistance.
Oh, yeah. But the fact that the building is so massive compared to the air, so the air resistance in this kind of situation would be pretty negligible. It's the structure under the building that would provide a measurable kind of slowing. And by the way, after about the first 2.5 seconds, it does continue to accelerate, but at a slower rate. So you can tell that at that point it's meeting some resistance. Had it been just buckling columns and things like that on the way down, that's the way it would have been the whole way down. So the fact that there was this initial rather large time interval where it was completely free fall means that there was a sudden onset all across the building. It was not just a column one at a time failing or anything like that. It was a sudden onset with the entire width of the building where it just went into free fall instantly and stayed in free fall for a couple of seconds. And if you figure out how far it fell in that 2.25 to 2.5 seconds, it was somewhere 80 to 100 feet, which is about 7, 8, whatever, in that range, that number of stories. So it's as though all of the columns there was like 24 interior columns and a lot more exterior columns around the perimeter, 80-something altogether. And all of those had to have been essentially removed for 8 stories simultaneously in order to allow this period of freefall. If any of those columns had remained, and as the falling building would have been buckling them, or as if the falling building was putting a force on these columns to cause them to buckle, there would be a reaction force, and that would slow the acceleration. So you would have seen, if this building had been crumpling as it came down, it would not have come down at free fall. And the only thing this is consistent with is completely blowing away the columns and having no support whatsoever.
Yes, and going back to the NIST report, the final report on Building 7 that came out in August, they put pretty much all the blame basically on a fire-induced failure of this column 79. What can you tell us about that?
Well, there's others in AE 9/11 Truth have studied that part of it a lot more than I have. But basically what they're claiming is that this one column failed because of like some of the beams that were up against the column, and these beams would have helped give lateral support to the column. And so other beams somehow expanded and pushed those beams out of their seats, and so they fell down. And then that left a long stretch of this vertical column that was not supported laterally, and it caused it to buckle. And so then it failed. All right. So, okay, eliminate one column. Where does the whole building come down because of that? And how does the whole building come down as symmetrically as it does, even without that? Plus, there's problems with that one column business. Directly above that column up at the top, there's the east penthouse. And you could see that the east penthouse caved in well before the entire building came down. And so that would be attributable to this other column. But there's a video, and I'm going to have to go find it again because I'm not sure how to describe it other than this. There's a video that shows when the east penthouse collapsed, you can look down at the windows in the, directly below them. And any tiny little deflection of the window changes the reflection of the sky. So there's like a ripple effect that comes down through the building. It's like a wave. And as this penthouse comes down, it's as though it's coming down at free fall through the interior of the building. So it doesn't look just like this column sort of failed. It looks like it was a massive failure of the entire region around that part of the building, as though, it looks like internal kind of a demolition right there. And for that penthouse to just sort of fall through the building at free fall is rather an incredible thing. From there, they claim that the failures propagated across, and they're basically trying to detach the failure of the interior of the building from the exterior. And so they just say that it's the facade of the building we see coming down at the very end. Well, that doesn't make any sense, because if you remember how the penthouse coming down through tipped the windows to where you could actually see very visibly what was going on inside by the nature of what you see on the outside. That wasn't happening on the rest of the building. The rest of the building was basically intact right up to the very end. And just as the onset of the whole building collapse was occurring, you see a bunch of smoke being ejected, or dust or whatever it is. There's just explosions or puffs or whatever they are, out of a whole column of windows over on the west side of the building. And it's, I don't know, the whole thing, the idea that the interior could collapse and still leave the exterior intact, and then somehow the exterior could just collapse separately, is ludicrous. The other thing is that west penthouse, that second penthouse, stays until the bitter end. It collapses just, a fraction of a second ahead of the global collapse of the building. So it's being supported right up to the very end also. So those interior columns were there right up to the brink. And then there's a point where the collapse begins immediately. It's an instantaneous transition from full support to no support. And how do you go from full support to no support in that kind of a time frame over such a large area across the entire building? That makes no sense. It has to be, the only thing I can imagine, at least, let me put it in those terms, the only thing I can imagine is that the columns across the entire building are simultaneously blown out down low in the building. All of the videos show essentially an intact building descending. And even there's a new video that's out. It's being touted as a new building. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it. There's no sound. And it's seen from sort of the end, and you can see the fall through a much larger section of the fall. I haven't analyzed it yet. There's some problems with analyzing it because the camera's zooming and panning a bit. And so just from the technical reasons, it's harder to analyze. I do have the ability to do it, but I haven't gotten to that yet. But the point is, that video shows all the way down to the halfway point, where you have a couple of mechanical floors, and you can identify those as where the spacing of the windows is wider. There's a bigger gap between windows there. And so you're seeing the entire top half of the building. And when the building comes down, there's nothing happening in the top half of the building. The whole top half comes down as a solid unit. The NIST analysis has all kinds of crumpling and stuff happening there, so it's very unlike what we actually see. So whatever destruction is happening, it's below what's visible even in that video. So it's down in the probably the lower third of the building where all of that demolition is occurring.
Sure, and this would line up with the general idea behind controlled demolitions, in that you take out some of the lower columns and you use the weight of the building to bring it down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. What happens is, in that 2.5 seconds or so, the building picks up speed to about 30 meters per second, which is about 100 feet per second. And then it stabilizes in its constant speed from there on. So you have this initial period of absolute free fall, followed by another distance in which you have minimal resistance. And after that, it's going at a constant speed. Constant speed means the upward force is equal to the downward force of gravity. So it doesn't continue to accelerate. However, what that's telling you is that the falling part of the building is doing a lot of work crumpling structure. So the speed of the building, the kinetic energy the building has by that time, takes care of a lot of the destruction of the last remnants of it. But all they need is to get the whole building moving at that kind of speed, which is what they did in the first half, in the first few seconds there.
Sure. I that's, you know, that's kind of the picture that I've had in my mind, you know, because I am familiar with how buildings are brought down, as Dan Rather would say, with well-placed dynamite to deliberately knock a building down. And we know Dan Rather didn't say those words again. But, you know, for those who don't know what I'm talking about, go and watch the videos. WTC7.net is a great website. You can watch all the collapse videos. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back to more of our talk with David Chandler, and we're going to get into some of his analysis of the NIST report and some of the things that took place on August 26, 2008, when NIST held a technical briefing, and I think that you're going to find this quite interesting. So we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back speaking with David Chandler, AE911truth.org, and we're going to take this short break, and we'll be right back.
Rock Creek gently flows through the parkland of Washington, D.C. until it meets the mighty Potomac River in the heart of the federal city. On the other hand, Rock Creek Free Press is a fiercely independent newspaper that's not afraid to print the truth. We print the stories that others won't touch. The 9/11 cover-up, media propaganda, government corruption, state terrorism, and violations of our constitutional rights. The Creek is a completely reader-supported publication. We accept no corporate advertising, no corporate influence. For a free, no-obligation issue of The Creek, just go to rockcreekfreepress.com. If you want copies for your local 9/11 Truth Group, send your request to editor@rockcreekfreepress.com. Rock Creek Free Press, not afraid to print the truth.
Spending hours a day tracking down the latest in 9/11 news. Next time, visit 911blogger.com. 911blogger.com is the largest blog on the web, which not only covers, but exclusively focuses on the cover-up surrounding the tragic events of 9/11. Thousands of daily visitors provide 911blogger.com with news tips from all over the world, making the efforts of individuals a forum for the multitudes searching for answers daily. And while you're at it, check out the latest project, 911podcast.com, hosting all the latest audio and video interviews, news coverage, documentaries, and many more in many formats, including iPod video compliant formats to please your needs. 911blogger.com, covering 9/11 related alternative news. Ask questions, demand answers.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Of the future. Imagine a boot stomping on a human face forever. Fight Orwell's vision. Or get ready for a boot in your face. Now, back to Visibility 9/11 with Michael Woolsey.
Welcome back to Visibility 9/11. I'm your host, Michael Woolsey, and we're speaking today with David Chandler. He is a member of the American Association of Physics Teachers, as well as an active member and participant in the Citizens Investigation over at AE911Truth.org. That is Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. And if you go to my website, Visibility911.com, go to my blog, and at the very top there, we've got an article, short article that David has written that includes about an 11-minute video that I encourage you all to watch. And we're going to talk a little bit about this video, but before we get into it, I'm just going to set it up by saying that NIST, less than 1 week after the release of their final report on the collapse of Tower 7, held a technical briefing, and David and Dr. Jones managed to get a couple of questions into this briefing. And so what I want to do for you now is just play a short clip from David's movie where David's question is put to the panel, and I believe it's the gentleman who answers the question is Shyam Sunder. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right, but he was intimately involved in this final report. So let's play that clip now.
Our next question comes from David Chandler of the American Association of Physics Teachers. Any number of competent measurements using a variety of methods indicate the northwest corner of WTC-7 fell with an acceleration within a few percent of the acceleration of gravity. Yet your report contradicts this, claiming 40% slower than free fall based on a single data point. How can such a publicly visible, easily measurable quantity be set aside?
Can you repeat the question, please?
Sure. Any number of measurements using a variety of methods indicate the northwest corner of WTC-7 fell with an acceleration within a few percent of the acceleration of gravity. Yet the report contradicts this, claiming 40% slower than the free fall based on a single data point.
Well, first of all, gravity is the loading function that applies to the structure, applies to all bodies on this planet, not just in ground zero. The analysis showed there's a difference in time between a free fall time. A free fall time would be an object that has no structural components below it. And if you look at the analysis of the video, it shows that the time it takes for the 17, for the roof line of the video to collapse down the 17 floors that you can actually see in the video, below which you can't see anything in the video, is about 3.9 seconds. What the analysis shows, and the structural analysis shows, or the collapse analysis shows, it's that same time that it took for the structural model to come down from the roof line all the way for those 17 floors to disappear is 5.4 seconds. It's about 1.5 seconds, or roughly 40% more time for that free fall to happen. And that is not at all unusual, because there was a structural resistance that was provided in this particular case. And you had a sequence of structural failures that had to take place, and everything was not instantaneous.
Okay, David, tell the listeners a little bit about how that came about with getting this question. And I thought that was quite a remarkable event.
Well, the word got passed around on the to the team, as we call it, for AE 911 Truth on the email list, and that there was going to be a tech briefing, and that it was basically just for engineers and people that could show professional affiliations. And I really wanted to ask a question, but I'm not an engineer, actually. I'm a physics teacher, as you mentioned. But I just figured, well, what the heck, no harm to try. And so I just used the fact that I'm, you know, my professional association for teaching physics is American Association of Physics Teachers. I've actually been quite active with them. I've actually been involved with their journal from time to time and things like that. But anyway, I don't speak for them, by the way. Please don't anybody interpret it that way. I'm speaking for myself. But AAPT, as we say, was my ticket into the briefing. And to my surprise, they accepted it. So I had basically got a password, and I got on their website, and I just checked my email before I went to school, and guess what? They said, here's your password, go for it. So I had about 5 minutes, and I just typed up a question, which was essentially, how can such a visible, obviously, you know, obvious and easily measurable kind of a phenomena like that as free fall be set aside? And the fact that it's been repeatedly measured to be at or very close to free fall. And I just sort of asked that kind of obvious question. You know, they can lie about the stuff inside the buildings, and how does anybody question it? Because it's all hidden from sight. But how do you question, how do you lie about something that's so blatant right there on the surface? And when I say they're lying about it, what they said in their draft report, which came out in August, was that it took 40% longer than free fall time. Now notice they're not mentioning acceleration at all. They're talking about the total time for it to fall the first 18 stories, which is the part that's visible on some of these video clips. And the only way you can get, they were saying that free fall would have taken 3.9 seconds, and the only way you can get 5.4 seconds, which is what they're claiming, is you have an artificially early start point to this collapse. And so it's not really looking at the nature of the collapse at all. It's basically, so here you start the clock and the building just sits there for a couple of seconds, and then it all of a sudden free falls. So that's a pretty bizarre way to describe the way the thing's coming down. What I did by contrast was I just measured it frame by frame going through a video clip, and you could see that it's in free fall. So if it's so easy to do, you know, I was just sort of leveraging the fact that here I am a mere high school physics teacher, and I can measure it better than they're measuring it. It was sort of like shaming them or something, you know, but they had really bizarre responses to that. So.
Well, we just heard that, you know, this guy Shyam, how do you say his name, Shyam?
I think it's Shyam Sundar.
Mm-hmm. You can hear him kind of, you know, jumping through hoops as he's trying to answer. I wonder if you could comment on his answer.
Well, all right. First of all, one of the things he says, I mean, first of all, he just sort of goes in circles. I really, if you watch my little video clip, I make a comment there that, hey, this is the kind of answer I get from students that haven't opened the book when they go to on a physics exam. It's like just wandering all over the place, how gravity affects everything on Earth, and not just, you know, it's ridiculous. So he was basically just stalling for time initially. However, once he kicked in, what he did was he explained why the building couldn't possibly have come down at free fall. I mean, he was saying how free fall is if there's no structure underneath. And there was structure underneath, and there was a sequence of failures that had to take place. And these didn't all happen simultaneously. So he's laying out the case for their assertion that it did not come down at free fall. And the problem with that is, all right, now look at the evidence. The evidence is that it did come down at free fall. So what he's doing is making our case for us that the building under natural circumstances could not have come down at free fall. And he makes the case for that himself. Now, at the time, they were denying free fall. So they were basically taking the results of their theoretical, you know, they have this computer model that they were using. They didn't have the steel from the actual building because that all got shipped off to Asia and melted down, presumably. So that the site had been scrubbed, so everything was going to be done like, can you reconstruct this? Can you come up with a plausible scenario where this building could come down by itself? And so that's what they were doing. So they put a computer model together that somehow was able to finagle this collapse to look more or less like the actual collapse. And then they said, that's it. That's how it happened. But the problem is their model did not come down at free fall, and I'm sure they tried. So if they couldn't get even their computer model to simulate free fall, they were sort of stuck. And so what they did was they believed their model, and they then they tried to cover up the fact that it came down at free fall. And only an idiot, I mean, anybody who has any measurement skills and, you know, I mean, all right, so it's not the man on the street, but somebody like a high school physics teacher could actually come up with recognizing that what they were doing was total baloney. So anyway, they covered it up. And so all I was doing was pointing out that, hey, this is a pretty blatant thing for you to try to lie about. What Stephen Jones did, I mean, this was a different section of the conference, but he came in. I heard this originally just in audio, and I just recently saw the video clip, and I was sort of interested in who the people were who were making these answers.
Let's go ahead and play that part with Dr. Jones where his question is asked, where he's actually asking a question regarding the assumption that NIST had made about the descent speed and that it was had remained constant throughout. So let's go ahead and play that.
This next question comes from Dr. Stephen Jones. NIST discusses the fall time for WTC-7 on page 40 of the summary report, where it stated, assuming that the descent speed was approximately constant. However, observations by others of the descent speed show that the building is accelerating rather than being at constant speed. So the question is, why did NIST assume that the descent speed was approximately constant?
Force of gravity obviously is the acceleration of gravity is what's at the driving force, and our calculation was based on the amount of time from the top of the parapet to fall till it disappeared from view between the two buildings seen in the video. That time was established from the video by a single frame search of the time, so that was down to 1/30th of a second, and then we did the same thing for when the top of the parapet disappeared. We found that that time to be 5.4 seconds.
Okay, so that was the question that Dr. Jones had asked during this August 26th technical briefing, where he's talking, he's asking the question about this assumption that was made right in the NIST final report on Building 7 that the speed was constant. Obviously, you pointed out that the speed wasn't constant, that it was changing.
Okay, here's the deal on that. If you look at the original draft report that came out in August, it makes the statement, which is blatantly baloney, that it came down at constant speed. Now, that is just flat out, it's almost like a typo, although it's maybe more than a typo because it's a conceptual error, but it's a misstatement. It's like just by calling it to their attention, what they should have said was, whoops, we blew it. It's not constant speed. We meant constant acceleration. Now, what they actually do in that analysis is they assume constant acceleration. The formula they give just a couple paragraphs later is the formula you would use if you assume constant acceleration. So they weren't actually acting on that belief that it was coming at constant speed. So what they had was a flat-out trivial misstatement, and they should have just immediately acknowledged, whoops, we needed to fix that and let it go. Now, what happened in the conference, especially once I saw it in video, Shyam Sundar very ceremoniously hands it over to John Gross to answer. Now, John Gross, if you look up his name on the Internet, you'll find all these YouTube videos where he's basically lying about not knowing the evidence that there's molten metal underneath the rubble piles and things like that. I mean, and you can tell just by his whole body language, his whole manner, that he's just lying every time he opens his mouth. In any case, he comes on and babbles on for a better part of a minute, I'm not quite sure how long, he just goes in circles. He's being nonsensical. It's like Sarah Palin all over again. And so here's John Gross coming up with all this totally irrelevant garbage, not answering the question about why that comment about constant speed. And then it goes back and forth a little more, and finally somebody steps in and takes John Gross's microphone and says, I think there's a problem here. We need to fix it in the next draft. And they just sign off on that. So for me, what the interesting thing was, John Gross, who was one of the lead engineers in the original 9/11, the original NIST report, here he is just making a total idiot of himself, trying to defend something for which there is absolutely no defense in anybody's book. And it just sort of demonstrates his character. He's ready to cover up anything that he, at the drop of a hat, whether it can be covered up or not. And if you just look, if you look at that video that I put together on this, you know, you see him with his true character coming out in spades. I mean, the guy's a slug. Anyway, that was the main point I got out of that was, hey, these guys are lying. And it's so blatant that they're lying.
Well, after watching the video, I have to wonder, I mean, I think it would be naive if we believed that these people did not know who Dr. Jones is. And possibly when the question was asked, it was announced that this was coming from Dr. Stephen Jones. And
yeah, it was.
I wonder if that kind of shook him a little.
I don't know. I don't know if that did, but he was definitely set to dig his heels in, and he wasn't going to give any ground on anything, even though if he just thought about it for half a second, he'd realize, whoops, this is one place we ought to just concede that there was a typo or something, you know? He could so easily have done that. In fact, that's what they eventually actually did do and spared himself all that extra show of ignorance or whatever it was in between.
So what did happen after this August 26th briefing? They did go ahead and make some changes. Is that correct?
Yeah. So what happened was, I mean, it surprised me and it surprised everybody I know that in the final report, which came out in November, right, at the end of November there somewhere, they went in and did a new analysis of freefall. And they actually endorsed the idea. They came out 2.25 seconds. My original one came out at 2.5 seconds of absolute freefall. In fact, one of the things that I think they do, in fact, you can tell they do it from various other things as well, is they're once again making their experimental data fit their theories. Because when I did the measurement, I would get numbers near free fall. In fact, I actually overshot it a little bit. In fact, my final measurement was 9.88, which is a little bit over the actual number. But there's always going to be measurement error, and that's just accepted in science, you know, that as long as you're within a certain boundary, you know that when you make measurements, you make little tiny errors of various amounts, and you have to just estimate the significance of the errors. Well, they, you know, when they decided to claim free fall, they pinned it absolutely right down to the digit, bang, on free fall, which, again, looks suspicious to me. But, I mean, hey, if you look at their data, that's sort of what it shows. So here you have a section of free fall. The problem is they had committed themselves to this whole idea that you can't have free fall. But actually what they did was they wanted to get that 5.4 seconds that their model showed from collapsed time. So what they're doing in their final report is they're taking the model, the computer model, which predicted a collapsed time of 5.4 seconds, and they decided to compromise or something, and they came up with a 5.4 second period in which they broke it up into three stages. So in the first stage, it's hardly anything's happening. And then the second stage, you have utter free fall. And then in the third stage, you have it tapering off. Well, the free fall and the little tapering off all is correct. I mean, that's observable stuff. But that whole first stage that they claim, there's nothing to it. It's like they've picked an arbitrarily early starting point. Now, they're claiming that's the first time they saw any movement, but they're taking some microscopic little movement. Well, you have the collapse of the penthouse and stuff like that going on, so you could pretty much take any point you wanted back there as the starting point. And the fact that they picked a point, in other words, they were claiming it's exactly 5.4 seconds to collapse in terms of their observations. 5.4 seconds is the exact number that their model was predicting. How do you get the exact number for a, in the first place, the model is based on all kinds of assumptions and things, and you're trying to model a very complex physical phenomena. The best you could do is maybe predict something within a certain number of percentage error. You're not going to nail it right on the digit. And they basically are trying to claim that the time of fall is exactly precisely 5.4 seconds, just like their model said. That's fabricating data, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, you know, I would nail a student for doing something like that. But so that's what appears to be going on there.
Well, it's kind of like the idea of having the desired outcome and then working backwards and making the evidence fit. Now, I think you even had a term for that in your movie.
It's called dry labbing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like in a chemistry class or something like that where you don't want to actually do the experiment, so you figure out what it's supposed to come out, and you fabricate all sorts of data to make it seem to work out. So it's, hey, it's doing the lab dry. So that's where the term comes from. But it's a general term for academic dishonesty when it comes to, you know, experimental data and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kind of thing that students can get kicked out of school, kicked out of college over something like that. And professional scientists and engineers lose their licenses or lose their professions over, you know, dishonesty of that sort. And these guys ought to, it's more than that, these guys are covering up a criminal event. And so it ought to be, you know, they ought to go to jail for doing stuff like that. They're participating in a cover-up if they're fabricating data in an investigation that has these kind of implications.
Well, we saw this happen with the final NIST report on the collapse of the towers, and they had, after they tried their real-life models, tried to get them to fail in the furnace, and that wouldn't work. They moved it all into the computer. And when that still didn't work, then they just started tweaking the inputs to get it to to come out with their final desired result.
Yeah. One of the things about these models they have is they won't release them. So nobody is allowed to see the actual inputs that they used or to try to run the model themselves. I mean, there's engineers out there who could run the same software on other computers and, you know, it's sort of like, you know, peer review, or is anybody going to check NIST results, or are we just supposed to take it on faith?
Right, we want to see if we can duplicate it.
Yeah, and so all it tells us is that if they tweaked their parameters sufficiently, they were able to get something that looked vaguely like a collapse. And but how realistic was their input? We have no idea, because they won't tell us. In fact, everything they've done along the line has been in that same vein. Even that video that I use that shows the tech briefing conference, that was a very difficult video to capture. They put it out in, they did not put it out in any kind of a capturable format, and it was done with I think Real Player or something, and or with Real Media. And one of the guys in our group who's very much into video, he had to really work on it to actually even to be able to capture that. So even something like that, they're making as inaccessible as they possibly can. And all this data is inaccessible. If you want to get the raw materials, like all their photographs and things like that, I think it was up around $17,000. I haven't read it for a while, so that's from memory. But it's like multiple thousands of dollars if you want to get a copy of the raw, you know, the CDs or whatever that has all the raw data that they use. I mean, it's an incredible barrier to people being able to check their work. And this is our tax dollars they're using. When NASA does stuff, you know, they go and take all these images around other planets. It's all out there, and you can, for a very nominal fee, you can download, you know, you can order the DVDs that have all the data on it. But, you know, NIST isn't doing that here.
Well, I sure appreciate the analysis that you provided for us to go ahead and disseminate out to the public. And there are a lot of people around this country and, indeed, around the world who are taking work by people like you and Richard Gage and Dr. Jones and many others, and taking that work and disseminating it out. So I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing, David. What do we have coming down the road with you?
I'm coming out with part two. When I started to do this video, I had in mind actually talking about the significance of free fall and how that played in with what the implications are and everything. And by the time I got all the like that coverage of the tech briefing and all that in, there was no way. So I decided to break it in half. So I'm actually this weekend, and hope, you know, I don't know exactly when I'll finish, but relatively soon I'm planning to come up with part two that finishes that project. So I'm really not, I'm only halfway through that one.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, I just want to give one other thing. I have a web page that basically is a portal to what I consider the best information on the 9/11 incidents and all that. It's 911speakout.org, and ae911truth.org is the organizational one. Mine's that. On YouTube, if you want to see the various things that ae911truth has, it's a channel on YouTube. It's called ae911truth.
Mm-hmm.
So those are some information that way.
No, that's great. I'm going to have to go check out your website, David. I really appreciate all the work that you're doing. Now, I just want to thank you for coming on the program and talking a little bit about your work, and just want to give you an opportunity to leave listeners with a few parting thoughts.
Parting thoughts? The whole thing has been that way. Keep your crap detectors on full blast, you know? You can't just accept the stuff people say. And the better prepared you are to deal with, analysis of statements, whether they're true or false, and claims people make, the better you're going to be able to judge for yourself what to believe. You know, don't believe something just because somebody told you to.
Well, and that would include us, you know. And so, you know,
yeah.
I've always encouraged people not to believe everything that I say. Go out and look for yourself, and do the research and do the reading. There's just tons of research that folks like David out there has done and pulled stuff together, and you don't have to be a physics professor or a physics teacher or even a physics student to be able to understand a lot of this stuff. So, okay, well, I sure appreciate you coming on the program tonight, David, and we look forward to your part two of your video coming out, and I want to thank you for all your work and everybody over at ae911truth.org. We've been speaking with David Chandler. He is a member of the American Association of Physics Teachers. He's also an active member at Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. I'd like to thank him for coming on the program tonight. This has been Visibility 9/11. I'm your host, Michael Woolsey, and we'll see you back here hopefully next week.
Put down that remote.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights. Among these rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Such as security rights, governments are instituted among men, driving the power to the consent of the governed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations and abuses are designed to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security and freedom.
Take back your freedom!
It's so hard. The Constitution is quite simple. The yin and yang of day and night. It was written from the hearts of all the people. You are gods. You are the light. A servant government, God-given rights. Wise men say, just do what's right. Freedom, leave the fear. Hearts will open far and wide. Listen to your mother's cry. Your father hopes for dreams tonight. Somewhere found between the lies. Take back your freedom.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their powers from the consent of the governed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty to throw off such government!
Take back your freedom! Life can be. You live in the day, you rest in the night. Where balance is found, it's meant to be. Wise men say, just do what's right. And listen to your mother's cry. Your father's hopes for dreams tonight. Somewhere found between the lines.